compelling insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Welcome back. This is Hour 2. The number is 888-914-9149. A big shout out to all of our new listeners who are just learning about Relevant Radio, maybe for the first time listening to the program. Welcome aboard. My number again, 888-914-9149. Cyrus, did you see that video? I mean, I couldn't believe my eyes. It's a TikTok video. It doesn't last very long, maybe 20 seconds. There's a woman on a Spirit Airline plane smoking a cigarette. You saw that, didn't you?
I thought smoking on a plane was illegal.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. It doesn't show what happened to her. And, you know, I guess the woman with her phone who was filming this, she says, could you please not smoke on the plane?
Oh, no.
Yeah. But she just lit up and she's smoking a cigarette. She's not trying to hide it.
Oh, she pulls her mask down. So she's wearing a mask, pulls it down, smokes a cigarette.
That is amazing. I mean, I'm sure that she got into some kind of trouble. There must be some fine. I mean, tampering with a lavatory smoke detector can give you a fine. I mean, I've listened to this announcement from the flight attendants a billion times, and they do announce that kind of thing. So I could just picture somebody in the bathroom trying to disable the smoke detector, and that's why they're there to catch people.
That's probably the most expensive cigarette she's ever had.
Yeah. Well, maybe the last one on it. Maybe that'll be the last time she'll ever fly it. I don't know. But it reminds me, just in passing, of course, smoking was on airplanes was common. It was not illegal. I remember I took a long flight from L.A. to Seoul, South Korea for some speaking engagement stuff I had to do. And that's in the time, and that would have been 94, I believe. And that's when they had smoking sections. They still had smoking sections on the airplane. And you could smoke a pipe or a cigar, whatever, cigarette typically. And of course, that's long gone now. And people are so conditioned to just be horrified if somebody lights up a cigarette, especially like in a inside a place like a restaurant, certainly not an airport. But it reminds me a little bit of how freely people used to litter in this country. And I remember as a kid, the anti-littering efforts on the part of the government in the commercials on television. And boy, did it really work. It got to the point where if you saw somebody littering, you would come unglued. You'd be angry. You'd be like, hey, I got to call the police. It was just, we went from being a country where littering was no big deal and there was no social stigma attached to it, to then now a huge social stigma is attached to littering. The same thing happened with smoking, which is just why it was just so shocking that she would light up on an airplane. Anyway, 888-914-9149. Let's go to John in Vallejo, California. Hi, John.
Oh, hello, Patrick. Hey, this is I just wanted to mention that the families that were at the ceremony with President Biden stated that President Biden actually checked his watch several times during the ceremony, not just once.
Oh.
He appeared to check his watch. So you, I think that video is actually on Fox News if you want to look into it.
Okay. Well, I did not know that. I appreciate you bringing that up. My point was that if he didn't really do it, then it's not fair to criticize him for something he didn't actually do. But if he did actually do it, then I think the criticism is fair, especially from these parents who lost sons and daughters. And the commander in chief is checking his watch all the time during this ceremony. You know, that would really irk me if I were in their situation. So thanks for clarifying that.
It appeared that he was checking his watch. It might have just been some type of nervous tick, but that's what the parents saw. So thanks, Patrick. I appreciate it.
Thank you, John. I remember in a debate, it was the nomination campaign for the presidency back when George H.W. Bush was running, and he got all kinds of flack because during the debate he checked his watch, and it was just like the end of the world, and what's wrong with this guy? So he was in, and he got a lot of criticism for that. And I think that may be for those who have a long memory, they're thinking the same thing in this case. But whatever, 888-914-9149. Let's go now to Joe in New Jersey. Good morning, Joe.
Yeah, good morning. I guess I'm going to ask if you could explain to me what that Texas law actually entails, that I'm kind of confused. I understand it says no abortions after 6 weeks, but what are the other components of that law and how do they work together?
Well, as I understand, and I haven't read the law itself, I've only read reporting on the law, and so it describes it in various pieces. But from what I understand, Joe, it sounds like the other part that's got people on the left riled is that it allows for anybody, you, your next door neighbor, whoever, to file a complaint or a lawsuit against somebody who breaks this law and helps a woman get an abortion. Now, I presume, the way I've understood the reporting, that this would apply to somebody. So let's say you drove somebody to an abortion clinic. Well, that would apply to you then, or the abortion workers, or the clinic workers, that is, or the abortionist. My understanding is that it opens up the possibility for private citizens who see this happening. They don't have to have any role in it. They don't have to know anybody who's involved. But if they see the law being broken, that they can bring this lawsuit that could fetch a fine of, say, $10,000. Now, I don't know whether any of that money goes to the person who reports it. I don't know those details. But that's part of it as well. And that seems to be the part that's also causing controversy in addition to the law itself about prohibiting abortions after 6 weeks.
Would that apply only to abortions in Texas, or would that apply to people who go for
only
abortions outside of Texas?
Only in Texas. Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I know. I was just trying to figure that out because I said to myself, that just seemed crazy to be able to just sue anybody that you thought was involved in helping someone to get an abortion after 6 weeks. I was trying to figure out, you know, if that was what the law actually said. But no, that's what I was trying to figure out.
Mm-hmm.
That I don't know.
And I'll try to get the text of the law. I'll try to get the law itself, and if I can do that in time for the show today, then I can read the relevant section of the law on the air. So please keep listening, and then we can post it so that you can check it out for yourself. Sound good?
Oh no, thanks. Yeah, that I was confused. I was trying to figure out what actually that law, what it was about. But
right.
But no, thanks for your time.
You're welcome. Good to talk to you. 888-914-9149. How about Jennifer in Fort Lauderdale? Hi, Jennifer.
Hi. Nice to talk with you.
Yeah, you too.
My question is, has anyone ever questioned who the fact checkers are?
I'll stop. You go ahead, Jennifer.
Well, I just don't trust them. Do you?
Well, in some cases, yes, I do. In some cases, no, I don't. So let's take a case of Facebook and Google, for example, and Twitter, saying that they have a team of fact checkers who are going to vet things that people post. And if they deem them to be misinformation, they'll take them down. And sometimes they'll even close that person's account. I don't trust them because they have an agenda. And they also have a proven track record of stifling free speech and preventing people from expressing an opinion that varies from, say, whatever the White House has to say or whatever, you know, going against the grain. So, no, I don't trust these anonymous committees of fact checkers. I don't trust Snopes. Snopes prides itself as a fact checking organization, but they have been found to be partisan and inaccurate in some cases. But if the fact checker, to answer your question, if the fact checker happens to be, as the caller a few minutes ago indicated, the parent of a fallen soldier or a fallen Marine or serviceman or woman, and that person is in the audience with, in this case, President Biden, and sees him checking his watch six times, as the caller said, during the ceremony, well, that kind of fact checking I do trust. Because that
Absolutely.
Person was there and saw it. So it depends on the situation, I guess.
Okay. Thank you. That was my question.
Okay. Thank you. Good to talk to you, Jennifer. 888-914-9149. Let's go now to Tony in Oceanside, California. We just had a line open up, guys. You can call it now. Hey, Tony, welcome.
Good morning, Patrick. Just a quick comment. I guess we don't really have to worry about Planned Parenthood and making money in Texas. According to the report they put out, I'm not sure how long ago, only 3% of their services are abortions. So
fine. Yeah, and that I know you're being tongue in cheek, Tony. I follow that, and you're right. Yeah, we have audio, and we'll see if we can't get that. But Live Action came out with basically a takedown of that claim. I think it was Live Action, in which Planned Parenthood was spouting the nonsense that only 3% of what they do is actually abortion related. And of course, that got picked up by all the, you know, their Amen Corner in the media, and they were saying the same thing. But it's patently not true. And if we can find that audio, we'll play that, which makes your point. That
right. And I did a quick Google search, and I found the actual printout. It's nice and pretty, and it's got their header on there, and 3%, and of course a bunch of other statistics and healthcare services and whatnot. But 3%. Well, so no trouble.
Yeah,
it'll be all right.
Well, I understand. I understand the sarcasm, and I agree with you.
Yes. All right.
Yeah, well,
thanks,
Tony. Good to talk to you. Thank you. Yeah, Planned Parenthood, there's a lot of money on the table for them. And, of course, they're not the only abortion provider in this country. They are the biggest one, though. And they have immense power, and they wield that power ruthlessly, because do not get between them and their money. That's what it's all about. That's what abortion is all about. The money component is so vast, and the influence and pressure that can buy you in political races and other situations. Do not underestimate how fiercely they are going. They are not going to go down easily. They will go down swinging, as Tom Petty might say. That's an awesome song, by the way, Swinging. Check it out. But they're going to go down with the most titanic struggle you can imagine. And unfortunately, they've got their tentacles throughout the media. So there'll be a lot of people trying to help big abortion stay afloat, and a lot of pressure being brought to bear against any movement that might go in the direction of overturning Roe versus Wade. You can count on that. We're already seeing it, and we've been seeing it for quite a long time. But it's going to intensify, I do believe. Let's go to Jennifer in Waco,
Texas.
I have that
audio if you want to get
to it. Oh, we do?
Away.
Okay. Jennifer, if you don't mind holding, hold on for a second.
Sorry,
and
Jennifer.
This is the audio of the Live Action refutation of the 3% thing?
That's right. Yep.
Okay. Yeah, let's play it.
America's largest abortion chain, Planned Parenthood, claims over and over and over again that abortion is only 3% of the services that they offer.
That's your self-reported abortion statistic.
3% of all the procedures we provide.
It's in their annual report. It's on their website. And their supporters say it all the time.
And abortions only comprise 3% of Planned Parenthood's health services.
Abortion services only account for about 3%.
Because only 3% of what Planned Parenthood does is abortions.
3% of patients visit Planned Parenthood for a safe and legal abortion.
Here's why that statistic is completely bogus, and why the senior editor of the online magazine Slate said that the 3% stat was the, quote, most meaningless abortion statistic ever, and why the Washington Post fact checker gave Planned Parenthood's 3% statistic three Pinocchios, marking it as, quote, very misleading. Let's look at the numbers. According to their own annual report, Planned Parenthood commits over 300,000 abortions per year. Last year alone, they did 323,999 abortions, which averages to 887 abortions per day, 37 abortions per hour, one abortion every 97 seconds. Again, Planned Parenthood commits one abortion every 97 seconds. But how much of what Planned Parenthood does is abortion? Well, let's divide the number of abortions they do in a year by the number of patients they see in a year. 323,999 abortions for 2.5 million patients means that 1 in 8 patients who walk into Planned Parenthood will undergo an abortion. Not 1 in 33, Elizabeth Warren, 1 in 8. It's easy to see where Planned Parenthood's priorities are. They commit 160 abortions for every one adoption referral. Though Planned Parenthood constantly talks about their breast exams and pap tests, they only do less than 1% of the nation's pap tests and 1.8% of the nation's breast exams, while they do 30.6%, a third, of the nation's abortions. But that's a public relations problem. So Planned Parenthood came up with a creative way to make their big business, abortion, look very small. To get the 3% figure, Planned Parenthood divides abortions by the number of so-called services, which they define as a discrete clinical interaction. And they count all these services equally, regardless of the cost, time, or effort it takes to render that service. So an entire abortion procedure, which can cost from $390 to $1,500, is counted the same as a pregnancy test, which a girl could get at a pharmacy for $10. In this way, Planned Parenthood is able to count 9.4 million services. Divide 323,999 abortions by 9.4 million services, and they get 3%. It's easy to see why this math is completely ridiculous. Say a woman goes to Planned Parenthood to get an abortion. She gets her pregnancy test, the abortion procedure, an STI test, and some contraceptives. In one visit, she gets four services, one of which is the actual abortion. So Planned Parenthood would say that abortion was only 25% of what they did for that woman, who came into the clinic only for an abortion. Well, by this math, even if 100% of Planned Parenthood patients got an abortion, they would still say abortion is only 25% of their services. Such distorted calculations could be used to obscure the purpose of any business. It would be like the NFL saying that because they sold 5 million hot dogs in a season and there were only 256 games, football is only 0.005% of what they do. Or it'd be like a steakhouse saying, actually, steak is only a very small percentage of what we serve because we also serve salad, mashed potatoes, french fries, beer, wine, soda, water, butter, salt, pepper, ketchup, toothpicks, and breath mints. We'd say, yeah, right, you're a steakhouse. Just like Planned Parenthood is an abortion corporation.
That is so good. And that's courtesy of Live Action. Their website is liveaction.org. Jennifer, thank you for being patient. We're going to take a quick break, and I'm going to come straight to you on the other side of this timeout. The number to dial, 888-914-9149. Notre Dame Federal Credit Union is a member of the Catholic Credit Unions of America. You can find more information and your local Catholic Credit Union at relevantradio.com/banking.
We've been waiting for a long time.
Compelling insights.
Yes, we've been waiting for a long, long time.
Unpredictable conversations.
We've been waiting for a long time.
Encouragement for your day.
We ain't gonna wait no more. We're getting ready to rock and roll.
It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Let me tell you about a free book, and you're going to like this book. It's by Father Rocky. It's called Marriage Insurance, 12 Rules to Live By. It's now available for free when you go to relevantradio.com/marriage. And by free, I mean you don't pay anything. You don't pay for the book. You don't pay for the shipping. You don't pay for the handling. You just go to relevantradio.com/marriage. Put your name and your address where you want the book sent. We'll send it to you. And I'm very confident you're going to find this book helpful. Some of the questions that are asked, you know, would you like a lasting, loving, happy, holy marriage? A lot of people don't have that. A lot of people want it, but they don't have it. But you can have that, and you can have a happy marriage, but you need to do certain things and avoid certain things, obviously. So in marriage insurance, these 12 rules to live by are the fruit of many years of counseling couples who are preparing for marriage that Father Rocky has done, counseling couples who have been married for, in some cases, many years. So he's learned some things that really do work, and he puts all that together in this book. And it's free, and you can get yours by going to relevantradio.com/marriage. Just go to Jennifer in Waco, Texas, as promised. Thank you for waiting, Jennifer. Welcome.
Hi. Thanks for having me on.
You're welcome.
I just wanted to give a little bit of insight about the Texas Heartbeat Bill. I work at a pregnancy center in Texas, so we've been kind of following it pretty closely, as you can imagine. I'm not a lawyer. I haven't read the bill actually myself, mm-hmm. but I will say they consider it a what they call like a bounty hunter bill. So
right.
The person who brings the lawsuit could benefit from the lawsuit.
Mm-hmm.
And then they also, the Texas Right to Life has a hotline actually that you can call and kind of report somebody helping somebody, and they will bring the lawsuit.
Right.
So
Yeah, it's definitely kind of unique.
Very unique, yes. you know, we'll see how it goes throughout the courts, and you know, I think they've already got it streamlined to the Supreme Court, if I'm not mistaken. But yeah, so it's exciting.
That's a good way to put it.
You know, it's in
it is exciting.
yeah, it is exciting. But we'll put it in the Lord's hands and see what happens.
There are a lot of people who are very excited about this, both the good kind of excitement and the bad kind. You know, one thing that I foresee, Jennifer, if there is a challenge to the law in some other way, it may take the form of removing that component of it where you can, you know, whereby currently, as I understand it, you're financially incentivized to inform on people who are accused of that. So that may not stand the test of time. I don't know. I was trying to think of any other state that has a law like that, and I couldn't think of one. Maybe there is one, but I'm not aware, you know, that there would be a potential cash prize for somebody who informed on somebody else. I'm not familiar with that happening anywhere else.
No, which is, I think what makes it so exciting is it's so unique. So we'll see how it plays out. But then I also wanted to comment on the live action audio clip that you guys played. That was fantastic. Very eye-opening.
That
was good information.
Cyrus, did you post that for people who want to see it or share it on Facebook or whatever? Can you post it?
I will try. I have that audio from a long time ago. I'll see if I can find it.
Right. Okay, good. Texas, yeah, if you can, that'd be great.
Go ahead. I was going to also mention really quick, Texas has a unique plan for women. So when we talk about women's health care, they have, I guess you could kind of call it like a Medicaid for women. So it's like Healthy Texas Women is what they call it. And it's very few restrictions as far as age and income. And basically you get your health care for free. So
that's good.
Yeah, it's really pretty amazing. So Texas really does try to focus on women's health from a different angle.
From the angle that's actual real health, as opposed to using the euphemism of women's health as a euphemism for abortion, which, of course, is anything but health.
Exactly.
Yeah. Good point, Jennifer. Thank you. And I like your choice of words. It is exciting. And there are many very excited people right now about this law who are not excited in a happy way. Thank you. 888-914-9149. Let's go now to Scott in Phoenix. Good morning, Scott.
Good morning. Yesterday, a lady called in about asking about Lazarus and the rich man.
Yeah.
And you explained to her that the heaven hadn't been open yet because Jesus hadn't gone to the cross.
Right.
Remember that?
I remember that. I do remember that, yeah.
I was wondering, you often say that heaven rejoices when one sinner repents, and then you say that Jesus even said that the saints and the angels are aware of, you know, of that somehow. If there were no, I mean, Jesus hadn't been to the cross yet when he said that, so there weren't any saints in heaven at that time, right?
That's true, correct.
So when you say even Jesus said that the saints and the angels are aware of that, I don't understand how you're coming up with that.
Okay, no problem. I can explain it. First of all, the issue of the gates of heaven being closed, that term you don't find it in the Bible, like you don't find the term the Trinity in the Bible. But the teaching is there. So you see it, first of all, in 1 Peter chapter 3, where it refers to what happened after the crucifixion of Jesus. For Christ also suffered, this is verse 18, for Christ also suffered for sins once, the righteous for the sake of the unrighteous, that he might lead you to God. Put to death in the flesh, he was brought to life in the spirit. In it, he also went to preach to the spirits in prison, who had once been disobedient while God patiently waited in the days of Noah during the building of the ark, in which a few persons were saved, eight in all, were saved through water. This prefigured baptism, which now saves you. So the point we see there is that all of these people of the Old Testament, they were, as it says here, in prison. They were not in heaven. and they were waiting and waiting. You see another glimpse of this in the following chapter, chapter 4, verse 6, where it says, "For this is why the gospel was preached even to the dead, that though condemned in the flesh in human estimation, they might live in the spirit in the estimation of God." So that is sort of an add-on to that passage in 1 Peter chapter 3, which speaks to the question of where were all these people who were going to go to heaven, but who are not yet in heaven. Now, if you take that and bounce it up against what Jesus says, this is the second part of your question. This is in Luke 15, verse 7. You'll notice the future tense of the word here. "In the same way, I tell you that there will be more joy in heaven over one sinner who repents than over 99 righteous ones who do not need to repent." So there's the resolution of the apparent contradiction, because it is true that when Jesus said these words in human time, there were no people in heaven because he had not yet died on the cross. But he wasn't saying that this was the case then and there, but that it would be the case at some, you know, at some point in the future. He doesn't specify when, but the rest of what we know tells us that that took place after the crucifixion and Christ's death on the cross. Do you see how that harmonizes?
Yeah, I think he was saying when someone repents, there will be rejoicing at that. Like when someone repents, there will be rejoicing.
Yeah, and he does say that, but maybe I misunderstood you. I thought you were seeing an apparent contradiction where how could he say that if there's nobody in heaven to rejoice except for the angels? Was that not
well,
your
yeah,
question?
Yeah, that's I am saying that because, you know, there are people repenting at that particular time, so it's not like there's not going to be anybody repent until after I go to the cross.
Right, but there's nobody in heaven to rejoice. So yeah, there were people repenting as Jesus said those words. That's true. But the context tells us that he's referring to something that will happen in the future at some unspecified point in time. And all I'm saying is that that does not contradict the point about those who, from the time of Adam and Eve forward, were not yet in heaven because the gates of heaven hadn't been opened yet.
So was there rejoicing in heaven when someone repented at that time?
No, there was nobody in heaven. I mean, the angels, sure, yeah, but there were no human beings in heaven when Jesus said those words in the gospel.
All right, I guess I don't quite understand, but okay, thank you.
Fair enough, Scott. Thanks for the phone call. Let's go to Hugh now in Los Angeles. Good morning, Hugh.
Good morning. Hi, Patrick. I'm looking for some kind of artwork, image, or some icons of saints for my children, for my children's rooms.
Okay.
So I was hoping you could recommend some.
Well, they are widely available. Do you have a Catholic goods store, Catholic church goods store in your area? Well, you're in Los Angeles. You have a number of them. If you do a quick Google search for Catholic bookstores or Catholic church goods stores, you'll find any number of them, and they will have those on the shelf. You can purchase them then and there. And they would even have catalogs that you could look at if there were other images that you would like that they don't have on hand. They can order them for you.
Do you have any online resources?
Off the top of my head, no. But it would be very easy to look for, just Google Catholic artwork, Catholic pictures of saints, online Catholic bookstores. I mean, these are all ways that you could easily find them.
Okay, great. Thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you. Steve in Minneapolis, it's good to have you on the program. Welcome.
Hello, Patrick. Thank you for taking my call.
You're welcome. Thanks for calling.
I just wanted to offer a comment about the Texas anti-abortion bill, and I guess I'm a little bit disturbed at the enforcement mechanism that can enrich people, you know, giving them, I think, a minimum of $10,000. I really think that we should consider taking some of that, maybe 50%, and making sure that we have postnatal and prenatal care for those pregnant women so that it makes it easier for them to choose life, and we want them to choose life.
Right.
And maybe eventually we build that culture of life instead of enriching people and suing in court and so forth. So
I tend to agree with you, Steve. That from the first time that I looked at that, I kind of scratched my head. It's an anomalous dimension of the law, as well, at least as far as I understand it, because it does seem to set up a kind of conflict of interest, or at least it's an unsavory connection with somebody ratting out somebody else and getting money as a result of that. Maybe, I mean, I would prefer to see this set up in such a way that if there's a $10,000 fine, then that goes to a pool, a fund that the state of Texas holds and then disburses on a monthly basis, let's just say, to approved pro-life organizations in the state. So the Homes for Unwed Mothers, the all the pro-life activities that are giving diapers and formula and clothing and education and housing for these mothers and their babies after they're born. There's a lot of that going on, and they need to be funded. So personally, I would rather see the law directing that money not into the pocket of the person who made the phone call, the anonymous tipster, but I'd rather see that money go to serving these women and their children after the babies are born. I think that would be a great use for that money.
Yeah, I think that'd be great. I mean, I think it promotes, you know, our true mission, which is not enough just to ban abortion, but to create this pro-life existence, this pro-life atmosphere in our society. And as Catholics, we really ought to pursue that.
I agree. Yeah, I agree. We don't want to have anything that would make this tawdry or you know, grubby, like money grubbing. And it does have that effect, I think. And it's going to be a useful tool for those on the left, a useful stick for them to beat this with, because they can invoke that. And I think people generally would look at askance at that and think, that's not a really a great idea. So that's what I was saying earlier. It may be that that will fall by the way. That part of the law could be trimmed off, I suppose.
Yeah, I don't know. The there's a lot of litigation around handicapped access, and there are some people that are profiting from, you know, going up to small restaurants and saying you don't have enough handicapped spots or whatever. So there is that tawdry element that we know can happen. But thanks for taking my comment today. Thank you.
You're most welcome. Thanks for calling in. 888-914-9149. By the way, and Sarah, I want to say thank you, Sarah, for finding this for me. Sarah just gave me the information on a source, the gentleman who called earlier about wanting pictures of saints. There is a website. I was unaware of it. It's called portraitsofsaints.com. I just pulled it up. Striking artwork, really beautiful artwork. And I wish I had known about this before. So they have, let me look. So yeah, they have prints. They have framed art and prints and such. And so not prints, not like the artist formerly known as prints. They have prints of the pictures, holy cards. They got a lot of stuff here. So Sarah, tip of the hat to you. Thank you very much. I didn't know about this. And you can check it out. Portraitofsaints.com. I think we have to take a break. So why don't we do that? We'll catch our breath. We'll fall back and regroup. Did you hear that Joe Rogan has tested positive for COVID-19? He's a big time podcaster. I don't understand why this is such a big story. Tens of millions, maybe 100 million or more Americans have gotten COVID and have recovered from it. And people are jumping up and down because he's got it. I hope he's okay. I don't get any indication that he's in danger of death, but that's a big story for some reason. I don't know why. I'll be right back. Catholic Order of Foresters is proud to sponsor the Relevant Radio Studio Line. For information about employment opportunities and flexible premium life insurance plans, visit relevantradio.com/Forrester.
Get connected to the conversation. Call now, 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid is on now. Relevant Radio.
Let's go!
All right, I did a little fact-checking during the break, because I said that Joe Rogan, the podcaster, he got COVID-19, tested positive, and I didn't know why this was such a big deal. Well, I fact-checked it, and I found out something I didn't know. Apparently, now I'm busy doing my radio program, so I don't have time to listen to podcasts and such. You know, when I'm not doing the program, I'm preparing for the program. But I do know that he's popular, and I guess he has had people on his podcast who have talked up maybe homeopathic remedies or, you know, just just barraging your body with vitamin C and zinc and other things to stay healthy. And so, correct me if I'm wrong on this, Cyrus, but I guess now my understanding is that when he announced that he had COVID, all of his detractors were super excited and they were gloating because, ha ha ha, look at him.
Uh-huh.
He was, yeah.
You got it. Now you'll see how sick you're going to get, and you're going to change your tune, Joe Rogan.
Yeah. That shows you.
It still sickens me that people get happy when other people get sick.
I agree. I totally agree. So then I guess the backstory then is he got it, he announced it, and he had it for like a very short time, right? He's had it like a day or two at the most?
He said, so he got it Saturday night. He isolated himself from his family. And then that next morning he took a COVID test. Sure enough, he had COVID. Mm-hmm. So he did all of the stuff he talked about on his podcast.
Monoclonal antibody treatment, prednisone, a vitamin drip of Zithromax, and the dreaded ivermectin.
Yeah, that's the one. And so he said Sunday was really awful. He had he felt terrible. Saturday, or then Monday, felt a little better. Tuesday, better still. And by Wednesday, he was like, I feel great. I'm on top of the world.
So now the people who are mad at him, see, it's all falling into place now. Now I understand the story. So the people who are gloating were mad at him before because he was pushing ivermectin and who knows what else.
Yeah, if he's
they
not,
didn't like that.
Yeah, if you're not pushing the vaccine, you're an enemy. You're the bad. You are the bad guy.
Right.
And
right.
And, okay. Go. It's your show.
No. But this is good though. So I just want to make sure I understand it because to me it was like a non-issue, but now I see what the issue is. So they were mad at him before because he was promoting these other methods of avoiding getting sick. Then they were happy that he got COVID, and they're really gleeful and gloating. Then it comes and goes in the space of like 24 hours, yep. And he's over it. And now they're mad again because it wasn't a bad.
Right. So,
for him.
So the things I've been seeing is, what's really going on is he's gotten the vaccination and he's just not telling anybody.
It reminds me of something. When Nancy and I moved to Columbus, Ohio from San Diego, where we lived before, which is like moving to a different planet as far as the weather is concerned. We heard so often that first year from people, and we moved here in early summer. So when we got here, the weather was beautiful, lovely, etc. When we got here, all the locals were saying, oh my gosh, just you wait. You San Diego people, oh my gosh, these winters are going to destroy you. You've never felt winters like this before. They were kind of gleeful that these newcomers from San Diego, which has the best weather in the world, if you ask me, were going to be completely just distraught come wintertime. Well, as it would happen, that winter was mild. And I remember saying to a few of the same people who were telling us that, so where is this really heavy-duty winter you kept telling us about? This is nothing. And they were disappointed because they didn't want bad weather, but they wanted it for us. They wanted us to experience a brutal winter, and it didn't happen. And, it kind of took all the wind out of their sails. And they'd say, well, back in 1978, we had this massive snowstorm and a huge blizzard. And it's almost like they were wishing to have that kind of weather just to show us San Diegans what real Ohio weather was like. And it never happened. And I think they went away unhappy as a result of that. You don't sound impressed, Cyrus.
I've had the same thing when I moved out to Wisconsin. But then the winter was awful and terrible.
And they were gloating.
Totally right. Yeah, and they loved it. Yeah. It's like, I don't know why you're celebrating. We're in this together.
I want to ask you a question, totally off topic, and then we're going to go to phone calls.
Serious
somebody,
question? No, okay.
We'll see. If somebody invited you to a welcome barbecue just for white people, would you go?
No.
Would you attend a whites-only welcome barbecue? Let's say you're a college student. So let's say that you're at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, for example, where they just removed that big racist boulder. Remember the boulder that had been there
for the rock?
It's a giant rock, a giant boulder. And because some journalist 100 years ago, almost 100 years ago, said something derogatory. It wasn't even connected to the school. The journalist wasn't. Just said something in a news report derogatory about black people, and in some way that was associated with that rock. Now, nearly 100 years later, a group of students lobbied to have that rock physically removed because they deemed it racist. So let's just say that school as an example. If you were a college student there and you were invited to a welcome barbecue that's intended for self-identifying white people, would you go?
Not a chance. And I'd be questioning who I'm hanging out with.
Yeah,
who are these people? I don't want anything to do with them.
Yeah, and why would anybody even want to have a welcome barbecue for students that's intended only for white people? And it, obviously, that would go down in flames very quickly, right? But it's actually, as it should, that's right, it's actually happening. So again, courtesy of Amanda Prestigiacomo on the Daily Wire, a welcome barbecue that is intended, quote, for self-identifying people of color will be hosted next month at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, the same university that had that racist boulder. So according to the College Fix, flyers posted at UW advertised the event, reading, "All are welcome, intended for self-identifying people of color," which is a mixed message. If all are welcome, then why say intended really? I mean, this is really for a certain group of people. But we're just going to say that all are welcome. That's how I read it. The welcome barbecue will reportedly be hosted by the school's Center for Cultural Enrichment, where their stated mission includes, quote, embracing all races, ethnicities, sexual orientations, gender expressions, religions, classes, abilities, or any other aspect of identity we hold. The report, this is from the College Fix, they noted that the event is advertised on campus in several dining hall locations, but curiously, the barbecue is, quote, not listed on the campus events calendar, nor the university housing events and activities page. In contrast, a Latinx, and I promised I would never say that word on the air again, but I'm making an exception here. I'm going to just fix that. A Latino new student welcome is posted online. UW-Madison spokesperson Meredith McGloin told the College Fix, quote, it is standard practice for housing to use signs rather than online listings. Regarding event promotion, it is standard practice for housing to use signs rather than online postings for things organized within the hall intended primarily for hall residents. The Latino student welcome is not organized by housing and is targeted to a broader audience. That's why it's promoted online. This is just silly and wrong, and they're trying to drag us back into segregation. They're trying to drag us back into the Jim Crow era where you had certain sections for whites and certain sections for blacks. And at that point, other racial minorities didn't seem to really figure into the mix. So you didn't hear much about, say, Hispanics or Asians or things like that back in those days. But that's where they want to take us again. But they want to reverse it. They want to reverse the polarity so that instead of, you know, no black people allowed here, it's no white people allowed here. Now, they're not going to put it quite in those terms, but that's the net effect, as we all can tell. And that's wrong because that's racism. And racism is always wrong, no matter who is perpetrating it. Racism is wrong. And it doesn't become right somehow if you're directing that racism at a different racial group. It's still wrong. It's still immoral. And yes, we have to speak up against racism at every step. We have to oppose racism at every step, including this type of racism that's masquerading as anti-racism. So there. And we are on the air in Madison, Wisconsin, from what I understand. So who knows, maybe University of Wisconsin-Madison may be listening right now. 888-914-9149. Let's go to Andrew in Tempe, Arizona. Hi, Andrew.
Hey, Andrew. Good morning. Good morning, Patrick. I had a question.
You're excited, aren't you, Andrew? I could tell.
I'm very excited. If nobody was in heaven until Jesus opened the gates, right, then where in the world did Elijah and Moses come from during the Transfiguration?
Great question. They came from where Jesus describes them being. In Luke chapter 16, the story of Lazarus and the rich man. So Abraham and all of the righteous of the Old Testament era, that would include Elijah and Moses, They were there in the underworld, in Sheol or Hades, and that and they came from there in the on top of Mount Tabor in the Transfiguration. They weren't in heaven. You know, they weren't in heaven in the beatific vision. They were in the underworld. That's where they came from.
Cool. That's all.
Yeah. I wish all questions were that easy. They were simple, anyway.
Me too. I always kind of forget about there's that the third place, the lobby before purgatory and heaven, I guess.
Right. And Abraham says there's a great gulf fixed between where the rich man was in suffering in the flames and where those who were with Abraham were resting in peace and tranquility. They were all in the same place, the underworld, but they were two distinct categories or two distinct sections of that. And so that's
cool.
Where everybody
Thanks
was
so much,
before.
Patrick.
You're welcome, Andrew. Thank you. You know, Cyrus, I'm reminded of from time to time we get people who say, you know, I hope this will be a simple question or I hope this will be a quick question. But what they really mean is I hope you'll give a brief answer, which I'm not known for typically. You're aware of that, right?
Yeah, very. Yeah. Very
I aware. Think we have a spot that actually reflects that. Uh-huh.
Oh, I got a little distracted. I'm reading some tweets that are coming in. Not everybody is a fan of yours, Patrick, or of this Texas law that just came in. Lois Bell is yelling at us in all caps. Texas has lost their minds. Well, my family, it's not a very good sentence. Well, I'll
Did
read
she
it.
Did she say a naughty word?
No naughty words. I'm just having... I'm going to read it exactly as it's written.
All right.
Texas has lost their minds. Well, my family there, if need to, will have to drive out of state. People need to mind their own business. And they add some other stuff that I guess I won't read. But
that's okay, Lois.
Yeah.
That's okay. Take some deep breaths. Go have a nice iced tea, and it'll all be better. And just think, I mean, if this law... does stand, there will be that many more babies born that won't be aborted, which I think is a great thing. I don't mind if people get mad over something like this.
What I do between me and God, not man.
Yeah.
Now the woman has to go through this alone, and who's gone to help her financially? Back alleys will be coming back. You can't stop it.
Well, I'd like to see that not happen. I wonder if she applies that same logic to vaccinations. I wonder if she says, you know, you have no say in what I do with my body if she chooses not to get vaccinated. Do you think she's consistent logically, Cyrus, if you had to guess?
Patrick, science only matters when it
helps
to your
you?
Beliefs. Right. That's the only time you have to listen to science.
Okay. It is a confusing time. So, Lois, all I would ask you is, do you apply that same logic that, you know, my body, my choice when it comes to vaccinations? If not, why not? That's all. And I really don't mind if you're mad at me. I really do not mind that one little bit. At least you're listening to the program, which is awesome. Let's go to Alicia in San Antonio, Texas. Hello, Alicia.
Hello. I'm going to take off speaker. Hold on. I had 2 points. First of all, with the Texas law, I live here in Texas. I've been here for about 14 years.
Mm-hmm.
I do disagree with the aspect of, making other people or fining or going lawsuits after other people that may be taking somebody to the clinic.
Yeah, I disagree with that too, just so you know where I'm coming from. I think that is tawdry. And it just cheapens, it makes this whole thing more shabby because it introduces a profit motive for somebody to snitch on somebody else. I'm with you on that. I don't like that part of the law.
Okay. The other thing that I am concerned with is this sets a precedent now, okay? And where this may set a precedent, I shouldn't say it will, where it may set a precedent is, I know my neighbor is not vaccinated. So I can wrap them out and make some money off of that.
Right.
That's my big concern. So when they made this law, they weren't thinking it all the way through. And
that's why I think concern. That's why I'm actually, you know, not having read the law verbatim, just going based on what
Me
I know.
Neither. Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm going to try to get that so I can read it to you. But just based on what I know, if that is actually what's in the law, I'd like to see that trimmed off. I'd like to see that removed so that you don't incentivize people financially to snitch on their neighbors. Because you're right, if it's for this issue, it could be used for another issue as well. And that would get extremely dangerous very quickly.
Yep. All right. Thank you.
You're welcome. Alicia, I appreciate that. You know what, Cyrus, please find the law for me because I'd like to be able to share the pertinent section that pertains to this. If you can, that would be great. I don't think we can take another call before the break because we have like a minute left and that wouldn't be fair. So we will pause for just a minute. We're going to take a break in a second. All you need to do to get on the program, because we now have a couple lines open, just call 888-914-9149. We can talk about anything on your mind, whatever it may be. I do have some audio I want to play for you from New South Wales, Australia. Just another example of the insanity that's happening down there in terms of government control over citizens and what they're saying now about COVID vaccinations. You think it's weird here? It is way weirder in Australia, as you are about to find out, because you're going to hear some audio that makes my point. Please stay right there. I'll be right back with the third hour of the program right after this quick timeout.
I got a fever, and the only prescription is more Patrick Madrid. Come on!